Welcome to Meshech Chochma Parshas Tazria. I guess the Iber Yor that we have this year gives us an opportunity to go a little bit slower and to do Tazria 1 week and Mitzora the next week. So I wanted to pick out a few Meshech Chochmas first on the Parsha. You know, these inyanim that we have in Tazria Mitzora are not exactly... even if you know Vayikra in general, which certainly I don't claim to do, but the inyanim of Saras and the like, which are mentioned in this week's Parshios, are things that are generally not so familiar to us. So having the Meshech Chochma help us through some of the inyanim, both in terms of the halachas as well as the hashkafa involved, will be helpful. If we have time, he has one piece on the Haftar for Parshas HaChodesh, which is this week, so we'll try to shtup that in as well. In the beginning of Parshas Tazria, in Perek Yud Beis, which is actually the shortest perek in the entire Chumash, the Torah talks about the karbanos brought by a yoledes, by a woman who has just given birth. Right? So it says Perek Yud Beis pasuk vav uvim los yemei tahara. At the end of the days of her purity, meaning the dam tahara, the blood that she experiences, doesn't make her tzmeya midin tahara, levain or levas, for the birth of a boy or of a girl, tavi keves ben shnaso le'ola, she should bring a one-year-old lamb as a carbon ola, as a burnt offering, uven yona osar lechatos, or a pigeon or a turtle dove, as a carbon chatos, el pesach olamayit lakoyin, to the entrance to the olamayit, v'kriva olivnei Hashem v'chiper aleha, and it's brought as a carbon before the Ribbono Shel Olam, zos taras hayoledes lazachar ol hanakeva. This is the halacha when a woman gives birth to either a male child or a female child. So the Meshech Chochma, page Reish Yud Dalid, the bottom right hand corner, comments as follows: Ben yono tar lechatos. He calls our attention to the following phenomena. Yoledes Ashira Mevia Chatas Of. Isn't it interesting how even a well-to-do Yoledes nonetheless brings a carbon chatas, which is an oaf, which is a bird? Now we know in general, birds as carbonos are brought when a person is an ani, when he's unable to afford an animal. The bird, cheaper is a lot cheaper than meat, especially if you have to get a whole animal, right? So b'derech klal, a bird would be brought in the case of someone who it's a carbon dallas, it's a carbon which is associated with poverty. Indeed, in the parsha of Yoledes itself, in the next couple of psukim, we're going to read about how if the Yoledes, the woman giving birth, is impoverished, she brings two birds, right? That's in pasuk ches. Vimlo simsa yodo de se, if she's unable to bring the lamb as the karbon ola, v'lok choshte sorim, right? So then she should take two turtle doves, two pigeons, or shnei b'nei yona, two turtle doves, echad la'ola ve'echad l'chatos, one for the ola, one for the chatos, v'chiper ola ha'koin v'tahera, and the coin brings them as the karbon, right? Or in general, when a person brings the karbon ola v'yoret, so if they're impoverished, they bring ofos. But here, the rich woman, or the woman who can afford it, is bringing an oaf, a chatos ha'of as a korban. Why? I mean, obviously, it's not just because she's impoverished or she's incapable. There must be some kind of hashkafa behind it. So what tack is the hashkafa? So he goes on to say as follows: the fisha karbano k'd Rebbe Shimon. Why does a woman who's the oledes bring a karban to begin with, right? Especially, why does she bring a karban chatos? Karban chatos implies that you sinned. I mean, childbirth is the most amazing thing. There's no sin associated with childbirth. Why would you bring a carbon chatos as a reaction to childbirth? So the Gemara Nida quotes Rav Shimon as follows, and Rashi brings it over here. Rashi brings it. No, Rashi doesn't bring it. Okay, I thought Rashi brought it. Rashi doesn't bring it. Right. So, but the Gemara mentions Kid Rav Shimon shebishoshi oledes umitztaeres, when the woman is, actually giving birth, she's in the midst of delivery, she's having a very hard time of it. Nishbas shlotizokik lebailo, she swears in her desperation that she's never going to go back and be intimate with her husband again. Look what trouble it brought upon her. You know, she was intimate with her husband. It brought her this whole tzara of childbirth. She swears that she's not going to go back to her husband. And of course, she doesn't really mean it. It's something that she calls out in her pain and desperation. But says Rav Shimon, but you know, it's a sin. It's a chet. I mean, she swore falsely, and to be mechaper for that false oath which she took, even though again it was under, you know, it was understandable, it was under extenuating circumstances, but nonetheless, that's, says Rav Shimon, that's why she has to bring a korban chatos. Okay, so we understand why she has to bring a korban chatos, but why does it have to be a bird? So Zokta Meshech Chachma as follows: Lachein Mavia Yona Lachatos. That's why she davka brings a pigeon or a dove as a korban chatos. She'eino manachas ben zuga. The Gemara in Erevin says we can learn fidelity from the dove. The dove never abandons its mate, and it always goes back and returns to its mate. So the very idea of bringing the pigeon or the dove relates to the very chatos. It relates to the very same issue which she has to bring the chatos for. She's bringing the chatos, says Rav Shimon, because she swears in her anguish, I'll never go back to that husband of mine again. We make her bring a korban chatos, and we make her bring a korban chatos from a bird, which davka, you know, is very devoted and loyal to its mate. She should learn from the Yonah, she should learn from the Tar, you know, that she should maintain the relationship with her husband, despite the quote unquote the pain that it entails, you know, which is brought about from childbirth. Right? So that's very fascinating interpretation. That's why the chatos is the bird, is the yona or the tar. What about the ola? Right? Now let's focus on the other carbon for a moment, the carbon ola, which she brings. The ola hu kefi anire, the role of the ola, it would seem, is as follows. Acharesha hoisa asura lavoa la kodesh, kol yimei tarasa. For all of these days, until she brings the karbon, she's not allowed to come back into the Beis HaMikdash. V'ko'es bo'o el HaKodesh, uvitoda lishmo yisparach al asher shava le'isona. Now, she's able to resume coming back to the Beis HaMikdash, right? And she's coming back for the first time, right? It was this whole time, since the childbirth, she wasn't able to even walk in to the Beis HaMikdash. Lo yeirayef fun of reikam. So just as we find by the Shlosh Regalim that there's a carbon that you have to bring, you can't just come up to the Beis HaMikdash without bringing a present. You know, you have to present the present when you come to the Beis HaMikdash to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Lo yeirayef fun of reikam. So too, this Isha Yoledes has to present something on the occasion of her being able to come back to the Beis HaMikdash. V'hu ke'en carbon re'iyah. It's, in a sense, it's equivalent to the carbon re'iyah, the carbon that men would bring when they were ole regel three times a year, you know, to signify the fact that they're coming up before the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? And then he writes as follows, and again, this is, we saw that he was apparently very fond of Ibn Gabiro, you know, the medieval poet. He quoted him before in a previous Meshech Chachma, so here too again, Matsasi Remez al Zebi Asaras, Ben Gabiro, Shlomo Ben Gabiro, Osamichei, right? When Ibn Gabiro writes of the various different mitzvahs, he writes that v'taharas hatuma, right? When the woman is metahe herself from her tumas yoledes, it's through carbon hanire, v'carbon chata'a, through the carbon of being seen, and the carbon chatos. So says the Meshech Chachma, v'kara leha'ola karbon hanire, u'kemoshe kosavti. Isn't it striking, says the Meshech Chachma, how Ibn Gabirol, in his poetry, calls this karbon ola a quote-unquote karbon hanire. The word itself is almost like karbon re'iyah. It's a karbon on the occasion of being reunited with the Beis HaMikdash. Right, so that's the role of the carbon ola. It's kind of like the same kind of carbon that one would bring when coming up to the Beis HaMikdash on a regel. And Ibn Gabirol hints at that in his calling it a carbon hanira.
But the carbon re'iyah is completely consumed, completely burned.
So is this? It's a carbon ola.
It's carbon ola. Yeah.
No. Again, just in the psukim, right? Uvim losi me tahara tavi keves ben shnaso la ola. Right. That's the carbon re'iyah, so to speak. Uven Yona Osar Lechatos. The bird is brought as a carbon chatos to be mechaper for the fact that she wanted to sever, you know, again, even momentarily, she wanted to sever the relationship with her husband. So the carbon chatos is mechaper for that and uses the imagery of the dove to stress the fidelity of her relationship with her husband. And the carbon ola is like the carbon re'iyah. It signifies the rekindling of that ability to come before the Beis HaMikdash.
The carbon re'iyah, when they brought it down to the regel, was a carbon ola.
Was a carbon ola also. Right, no, the carbon chagiga was the shlamim. Right, but the carbon re'iyah was an ola. Right, so in other words, it fits perfectly, you know, with the model that we have.
There were three then, the carbon re'iyah, the carbon chagiga, and the
shlamim chagiga. No, so the shlamim are the chagiga. It's a tiny half. It's the same thing. The chagiga is the shlamim. Right? So the truth is, the Meshech Chachma is a fascinating Meshech Chachma on both counts. You know, the role of the Chattas and the role of the Ola. One thing which I think the Meshech Chachma probably thought, because I think it's an obvious Ha'ara, but, you know, we'll just speak it out because it doesn't quite speak it out. There's actually a tremendous parallelism between the way he explains the Chattas and the way he explains the Ola. You know, this woman who's a Yoledis has just suffered distancing in two relationships. You know, her relationship with her husband has been strained, and her relationship with the Mikdash, with the Ribono Shel Olam, has been strained. So the Karban Chatos serves to rekindle her relationship with her husband. The Karban Ola serves to rekindle her relationship with the Mikdash, and by extension, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So again, he doesn't explicitly make that point, but I mean, it's such an obvious next step from what he says that probably that's what he meant. And he thought that that's so poshut. I mean, everyone's going to understand that. I don't even have to speak that out. But there's a tremendous, fascinating parallelism between the Chatos and the Ola themselves. They really accomplish the same thing. Al Derech Musar, I mean, again, you know, it's not really what the Meshech Chachma is talking about directly, but, you know, again, I'm a pulpit rabbi, so I get paid to, you know, to give over these kinds of Musarim. Again, you know, if anyone ever deals with a woman who's just given birth, there's a tremendous psychological sense of distancing, you know, and sometimes even depression, which can come about, you know, after the, you know, after giving birth, you know, postpartum depression. And, you know, again, it's a tremendous important thing to be aware of and to try to address on some level. One might suggest, again, maybe it's being overly psychological over here, but one might suggest that, according to Meshech Chachma, the Torah, in a sense, is addressing different aspects of the postpartum, either depression or distancing. The woman, after childbirth, feels a strain on her relationship with her husband, and she feels a strain on her relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, or with the Beis HaMikdash. Come these two karbonos and address them, and say, no, come back to your husband, come back to the Beis HaMikdash. Similarly, one musar that we should draw from this, even not in the realm of karbanos, is how important it is to deal with women who have just given birth, to do whatever we can to alleviate that sense of distance and tension and stress, you know, that they may feel, both in their marital life as well as in their religious life, you know, being distanced both from their husbands and from the Mikdash, you know, the Mikdash Ma'at, from the community, from davening, from shul, you know, whatever it happens to be. Okay, so that's a very fascinating insight in terms of Tumas Yoledes. Let's move on to what the major discussion here in the Parsha is about, namely about Tumas Negoim, the halachos of Tzaras, and how to deal with Tzaras. Right? So on page Resh Tesvav, the bottom left of the page, he quotes the Pasuk. The beginning of Perek Yud Gimel talks about Negoim. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe v'el Aaron leimar. Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron saying, Adam, ki eve or v'soro seiso sapachas uvaheres. When a person has on his skin one of these afflictions, v'hayo be'or v'soro l'negad soroas, right? And it seems to be an affliction of tzaras. V'hu v'el Aaron ha-kohen, the man should be brought to Aaron ha-kohen, o el achan mibonav ha-kahanim, or he should be brought to one of his children, the Kohanim. So, comments the Meshech Chachma. Inyan hanegoim shenimseru le'aron ha-kohen whom isisrei ha-torah asher ha-tumah v'ha-tara toli ba-kohen. You know, it's a funny thing, and ultimately one of the secrets of Torah, which we're not going to be able to fully understand. But the fact that the laws of Tzaras were given over to Kohanim, you know, to deal with, is not immediately obvious or self-evident. Kohanim are involved with Karbanos, right? They're involved in the Avodah of Hashem in the Mishkan and later the Beis HaMikdash. Kohanim are not doctors, right? Kohanim are not Tumah V'Tara experts per se. L'chara, you know, a guy who learned in a Taharas Kailo would be in a much better position to know about Taharas, you know, about Tzaras, than a Kohen. I mean, what makes him an expert just because he's a Kohen? So why did the Torah give over the whole Parsha of Tzaras to Kohanim? Kohanim, again, they're involved in the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. Tzaras really has nothing to do directly with the Beis HaMikdash. Determining whether it's Tameh or Tahor, you know, shouldn't you know, you wouldn't think offhand that it should be the role of the Kohen necessarily to get involved.
But aren't Kohanim supposed to be the Talmid HaChachamim of the generation?
Right, so that
so they have a role of teaching.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that might be one answer. One might say, well, you know, Kohanim are really being involved over here in their teaching role, not in their religious functionary role, right? We know that Kisif Se Kohen Yishmu Das V'Sari Vakshim Yipil, so Kohanim is supposed to be Talmid HaChachamim, you know, and therefore it's appropriate that they get involved in these things. True, but, you know, I think the Meshech Chacham might say back, but that doesn't always work in practice, meaning you can have a Kohen Am Haaretz. I mean, the Gemaras describe how, you know, a Kohen might go out to check somebody for Tzaras, and this Kohen, you know, wouldn't know Tzaras if it came and hit him over the head, so he brings his friend, the Kol Yunga Man from the Taharas Kailo, with him. You know, and the Taharas expert whispers in his ear, it's Tameh, it's Tar, right? But it's up to the Kohen in Halacha to actually pronounce the Nega as being Tameh or Tahar. You know, he doesn't know what he's saying, you know, just feed me the words, tell me what to say. But, you know, Alpi Halacha, we need that Kohen to say the words, right? So wouldn't it have been on a certain level easier for the Torah just to say, let the Talmidei Chacham, whoever they happen to be the ones who are going to paskin the shailas with regard to Tumas Tzaras? What if the Kohen's an Amar's Gomor? So, but he can proclaim it to be Tameh or Tahar, you know, irrespective of what he actually knows.
But since the Kohen's involved in Kushim, so he should also be involved in purification of things to become Kushim.
Okay, maybe, but that's not obvious. In other words, Kushim and Taharas, right, the two starim and Mishnayos, right, and they're linked, but they're not exactly the same thing. But he does make the following observation. But there is a parallelism, he writes, between the Kohen's involvement in Tzaras and the Kohen's involvement in Parah Aduma. Gemara in Zvachim learns out that the Shechita of the Parah Aduma has to be done davka by a Kohen. Right? The pasuk that we just learned at Leah Shabbos talks about how Elazar HaKohen is the one who shechs the Parah Aduma. A non-Kohen can't shech the Parah Aduma. So the Gemara says, Mishum de Parah Kodesh Bede Kabayis L'Kodesh Mizbeachu Omer Rav Shisha Breda Rav Idi Midi Dehavi Amaris Negoyim De Lav Avodah Hi Ubaye Kahuna. The Gemara says, wait a minute. Why should the Parah Aduma need to be shechted by a Kohen? A carbon doesn't have to be shechted by a Kohen. Shechita Ksheira Bizar. The halacha is that the Yisrael can go and shecht a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. So I don't understand. A carbon in the Beis HaMikdash doesn't need to be shechted by a Kohen, and the Parah Aduma does have to be shechted by a Kohen. So the Gemara says, well, you know, the Parah is not Kodshe Mizbeach. It's not actually a carbon. It's Kodshe Berek Habayis. It's holy, but it's not holy of the type that's going to be on the Mizbeach. So, okay, so that's an argument that it should be less strict than carbonos. So explains the Gemara there in Zvachim, Midi Dehavi Amaris Negoim. We compare the Shechita of the Parah Aduma to the involvement of the Kohen in Negoim, in Tzaras, right? The Lav Avodah Yubai Kahuna, just as Tzaras is not Navoda at all, and it requires the involvement of the Kohen, so too, Bedavka, because Parah Aduma is not Navoda, it's not part of the service in the Beis HaMikdash, Davka, because of that, that's why it requires a Kohen. Why? So what he's getting at is that you see, the Gemara is saying, you see from Negoim that the Kohen actually has a double role. the Kohen's role is to be involved in Seder Kodshim, but the Kohen's role is also to be involved in Seder Taharus, as we see by Tzoras, and just as we see the Kohen is involved by Tzoras, by extension, it makes sense that he should be involved exclusively by Parah Aduma, because Parah Aduma, I mean, after all, Maseches Parah, right, is in Taharus, right? I mean, ultimately, it's a function of Tumma Vitara and not a function of Kodshim. V'chein para, I'm sorry, the horulonu ha'yishtavus, the maros negoim ton eitz eres ve'ezov b'taraso, v'chein para aduma, v'heim ha'shneim inyan tahara v'tumma, v'nimsir lakoy, lo mitzad avodah, d'shneim b'chutz. If you think about it, says the Meshech Chachma, there are actually a lot of parallels between Tzaras and para aduma. First of all, both of them are b'chutz. Both of them are outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Everything involved with the Parah Aduma takes place outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and Tzaras, obviously so. They're both involved in Tumah V'Tara. Parah Aduma is used in being the Tara person from Tumas Meis. And look at this. I mean, he draws a fascinating parallelism. He says, look at some of the things that are involved in both cases. Eitz Erez, Cedar, Ve'ezov, right, and Hyssop. Right, when in Parshas Mitzora, when we read about the Tahara of the Mitzora, the Eitz Erez and the Ezov are going to be used, right? Symbolic of the fact, say Chazal, that even the mightiest person, like an Eitz Erez, is brought down low, has to be humble, like an Ezov, like a lowly hyssop, right? So that idea of those ingredients are used both in the preparation of the Mechatos, by the Parah Aduma, as well as in Taharas Mitzora. So whatever it signifies exactly, that commonality of ingredients signifies that there's some kind of linkage between Parah Aduma and Tzaras. Just as the Kohen is involved exclusively in the realm of Tzaras, the Kohen should be involved exclusively in Parah Aduma. Now, he just mentions this as an aside, you know, to talk about how the Kohen's involvement in Tzaras is a whole different realm of the Kohen's role. You know, the Kohen is not just a Kodshim man, he's also a Taharus man, you know, so to speak, as we see in Tzaras and Parah Aduma. He never really comes back after this point, as far as I understand the Meshech Chachma, to explore the deeper connection between Tzaras and Parah Aduma. I mean, he raises a number of parallelisms, you know, the idea of the Eitz Erez and the Ezov is a fascinating one. You know, the fact that there's this parallelism in terms of how both of them are supposed to convey the idea of humility, but he never really comes back to explore them. Perhaps, again, this is me, this is not the Meshech Chachma, but perhaps one might suggest that Tzaras and Parah Aduma are both involved in a certain level, not just on Tahara, but also Kapara from Chet. There's also an element of atonement which is involved in both of them. Tzaras, as we know, is associated with Chet. In other words, the way Chazal understands Tzaras is not just, oh well, you know, you went out without your galoshes, you know, in the wet rain, so you caught a really bad skin disease, you know, as a result. No, Tzaras, according to Chazal, is the result of a person having done terrible, terrible averos, right? Parah Aduma also, I mean, Tumas Meis is not the result of averos, but as we spoke about actually in Parshas Parah, Parah Aduma is mechaper for the Chet Egel. You know, it has an element of kapara in the thought of Chazal, you know, national kapara. You know, so maybe it makes sense for the Kohen to be involved in both of those things, because the Kohen has a role of as being mechaper. The Kohen brings karbonos to help be mechaper for Klal Yisrael, and the Kohen is involved in those aspects of Tumah V'Tara that have a kapara element to them. And that's why Davka Parah Aduma and Tumas Tzaras, you know, have these parallelisms that link the two of them. That's me. That's not the Meshech Chachma. So if you don't like it, you can. It's okay. It's okay. All right. We'll say that for the tape. It's okay. But it's Muskim and a Bezdin here in Bialystok for sure. But you know, again, that he doesn't make that point. That's
related to
they're both related to Misa. Right. Well, Mitzorah is Nechshav Kemes.
And then Mitzorah
is Choshev Kemes. Right, 100%. You know, so a Mitzorah is Choshev Kemes. Mes is Choshev Kemes, right? And that's the Kosker said, right? The Gematria of Chet is also Chet, right? So, you know, there's a parallelism on that level as well, you know, that there's a connection in terms of Misa, of dying, and, you know, in a sense, being reborn again. The Meshech Chochma himself offers the following explanation, a very fascinating explanation again, why the Kohen Davka should be involved in Tumah V'Tahara, in Tumas Tzaras. Omnam Yesh Lomar, maybe you can suggest as follows. Dinei Anigoyim Himachlo HaMistabekes. Right, we have reference to the fact that saras is something which is contagious. You know, saras is something which is spreading. Right, you shouldn't go into
physical contact by flesh and her.
Right, but you know, he quotes midrashim and gemaras that you know you shouldn't walk within the area of the saras. Of the mitzora. I mean, the truth is that's the poshut pshat of the chumash, right? Michutz la'machana yesher. If he goes outside of the camp, he calls through, covers himself. Tome yikra, right? As he calls that, I'm tome, right? The simple pshat in all of that is that there's a certain contagious element to tzoras. Right? It's interesting. Shamshon Rafael Hirsch in his commentary on the chumash, it's a very long explanation on Pashas Tazria, where he argues against the common. You know, the common belief that saras is leprosy, right? You know, if you look in most English translations of the Chumash, they say saras is leprosy. So Rav Hirsch says, nothing doing, it's absolutely wrong to say that saras is leprosy. And he goes and brings a whole bunch of proofs that even just reading the Chumash, the symptoms of saras do not correspond to the symptoms of leprosy. He quotes from the Royal British Academy of Medicine, right? And he writes, among other things, that leprosy is not contagious, right? You know, again, Baruch Hashem, nowadays we don't really have leprosy, but in the third world, you know, they still have occasions. I recently Ethiopia, places like this, you know, there still are occasions of real leprosy. And Rahman al-Islam is a terrible, terrible disease, but it's not contagious, right? And says Rav Hirsch, you know, it's very clear from the Psukim and Chumash that the Chumash seems to treat saras as a potentially contagious disease. That's why the guy goes outside of the camp. Again, leaving aside, you know, Mesora, Motsi Shemra, and all of that, but I'm just reading the Pashat of Pshat and the Psukim. It seems like we're dealing with a contagious disease, an infectious disease, and that doesn't fit the description of what leprosy is, because, you know, again, it's a Beferish, you know, Royal British Academy of Medicine, that leprosy is not contagious. Right, so he again, the Meshech Chochma is not making reference to that Royal Academy of Medicine, although you never know, he might have known that. But he says I'm sorry.
They used to feel that leprosy was contagious.
Yeah, because otherwise, yeah, they like a leper, you know, like
it has special violence.
People who went to volunteer were considered so bad because they went actually to live among the leper.
That's what he quotes. You can take a look in Rav Hirsch, but he writes, you know, the leprosy.
It's not highly contagious.
Uh-huh.
You could catch it, but it's not.
It's not extremely contagious. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the impression you have from Chumash is we're talking about something which is contagious enough that you would send the person outside of the camp, and he would quote midrashim like that. V'lachein tome yikro, v'ha'is'askus bohu inyan mesukah. Since dealing with saras is so contagious, again, as you mentioned a moment ago, so dealing with mitzoraim is risky business. It's like, you know, the brave souls in Japan who are going into a nuclear reactor and, you know, exposing themselves to radiation, you know, for the benefit of the klal. Vitzarech l'hashkocha nifla'a protius, and you need incredible hashkocha to get involved with these mitzoraim, because the very exposure, Rachman al-Islam, could kill the person. Asher ha'osek yinutzal mizeh, v'yinivda asher ilav lo tidbak hanega. You know, chas v'shalom, you don't want, you know, being involved in the tzaras for the tzaras to be catching. V'lochein bochara ha-toraz b'vnei Aaron. Asher heimo nivdolim mishar yisrael mishkochim b'protios yoser. That's why the Torah chooses the Kohanim to be involved with tzaras. There is no intrinsic connection between tzaras and being a Kohen. But you know what a Kohen has? A Kohen has super-duper hashkocha. When God sets aside the Kohanim to be His special group, right? One of the advantages of being a member of the Kohen Club is you get special hashgacha pratis.
Like X-ray
vision? Yeah, it's not like that, right? But as you have special hashgacha pratis as a Kohen. So therefore, what better person to send to work with these contagious mitzoraim than people who already have hashgacha pratis that they're especially watched over by the Ribbono Shel Olam? Kmo d'ksiv, Vayibodel Aaron l'Kodesh Kodashim, Right? It says in the Vayomim that Aaron was separated to be holy of holies. Now again, we normally understand that pasuk to mean he was set aside for a special task. But the Meshech Chachma, fascinatingly, I mean, it's a fascinating insight into Kohanim, right? The separation of Kohanim speaks to their being invested which with extra hashgacha pratis above and beyond the norm, right? I mean, I don't know that he would say this, but it almost sounds like if you plan to go on some dangerous journey somewhere, take a kohen, take a kohen with you, right? I mean, that he doesn't say that. I mean, I'm not sure that he would say that halacha l'maaseh, or even that he suggests that. But it sounds like, you know, I mean, you're going in a place that's a little dangerous. Take a kohen, you know, because kohanim are blessed with special hashgacha practice.
Excuse me, when you talk about life threatening, it's life threatening to someone who has tzaras. He's in a life threatening situation.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, in the Meshech Chachma. Meshech Chachma is saying, since tzaras is contagious, and we're asking people to come near this mitzora and to analyze it, and to, you know, to paskin on the quality of tzaras, so the person who's going to be exposed to the tzaras is going to, you know, open himself up to catching this disease, right? So we want to send people.
I didn't even know I didn't know if it was life threatening.
Let's say
the person that had it.
Yeah, but let's say it's not life-threatening, but it's contagious. You know, in other words,
Kohen has an immunity.
Right. There's a special gene for immunity in the Kohanim. I mean, that's what he's suggesting. Now, again, this would be fascinating. I don't know if there's any research on this. We know there's a lot of research on the Kohen gene, you know, that's been discussed in recent years, the fact that Kohanim can be identified by their DNA. Right, it would be fascinating. I don't know if there's any research to support this whatsoever, but it would be absolutely fascinating if in addition to having a Kohen gene, that there was some kind of genetic immunity to anything that attached itself to that kind of gene. Again, that's really out there, but it would be fascinating if there was such a thing. Yeah.
As being a Kohen,
yeah.
Somehow I do feel, I'm not arrogating anything to myself, but I feel I do have some special confidence.
Okay.
As a Kohen.
So stick with us, we'll all go places. Yeah. So again, a fascinating idea, even if you're not so convinced with regard to the Kohens of Malvin and Saras, in other words, that's the reason for the Kohens of Malvin and Saras, we know. The only reason the Kohanim are involved in tzaras is because they're less susceptible to the contagious tzaras disease. Okay, even if you're not into that, but the Meshech Chachma's idea is still fascinating in terms of Kohanim in general. The notion that a Kohen has extra hashkacha pratis above and beyond that which a regular Jew has is a fascinating, fascinating concept in hashkacha, which he wants to relate to ultimately to the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. I want to take a look at on page Resh Tes Zayin, again, just going on with some of these laws about Saras. The second paragraph on Resh Tes Zayin, V'ro HaKoin Es HaNega, right? The next pasuk in Yud Gimel, the Kohen is called in to take a look at this potential Negav Saras. And the pasuk says, Yud Gimel Gimel, V'ro HaKoin Es HaNega Be'or HaBosar, the Kohen sees the affliction in the skin, right? The Seyar Bonega Hafach Lavon, right? The hair in the affliction has turned white. Umari Hanega Omok Me'ar Besaro. The appearance of the affliction is deeper than the skin. Negat Saras Hu. Then it's a Negat Saras. Then it's an affliction of Saras. V'ra'ohu HaKohen V'timei Oso. And the Kohen will see him and be metame him, right? And declare him to be tame. So the Meshech Chachma points out that the word vira'a, the verb vira'a in some form, is used twice in this pasuk, and it seems extraneous. Hakfelis mavur, right? It talks about the Kohen seeing the negats twice, right? Vira'a hakohen es hanega, vira'ahu hakohen v'time also. Right, one of those vira'os should be eliminated. Right, vira'o hakohen es hanega, da 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 da, negav sarasu, v'timei also. Right, v'timei also hakohen. Why do you have to say vira'ohu twice? Right. So says the Meshech Chachma. This is a beautiful classic Meshech Chachma because he uses this question, which is a question in Pashut Pshat, to explain a halacha that Chazal actually get from somewhere else. Right? But he says, as much as Chazal darshened it from another pasuk, you can see it in this pasuk as well. Again, a classic example where Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebaal Peh really mesh together beautifully if you just know how to read properly.
Is it possible that the first time it says Rohanis, he just stops, he physically sees it?
Yeah.
And the second time he sees it with his insight?
Oh, very good. So let's take that idea. There's seeing and there's evaluating, right? To be roe can mean both, right? In other words, roe can be physical seeing and shatsing it up, you know, evaluating something, insight into
you
know,
it.
Right? Right. So let's take all that and read into the Meshech Chachma for a minute. Yitachin al derech razal shakavon ashiris hanega yihi ru'uya l'tamo. Right? You know, Chazal tell us that even when something is a negat sara'as, one should not always be metame it. Right? The first re'iya that the Kohen does just has to be a physical analysis. Does it have the white hairs which would render this a negat saras? That's the first level of ra'a. Let him not analyze, let him examine. Right? So he examines it, he sees it, and he sees, okay, you know, check, this seems to be tame. Oh, but then there's a second level of re'iya. The second time it says ra'o in the pasuk, hu shiyir ha'koin al ha'ish im roi l'tumoso. Even if it's a negav saras, but maybe I shouldn't be metame this guy. What do you mean? Hu im chasa nosnin lo ko zayin yimei ha'mishta. V'chein b'regel nosnin lo ko yimos ha'regel shalo arbev sim chasa u'dvachei ha'darchei noah. Now Chazal tell us that a Kohen shouldn't always proclaim a negat saras to be saras, even if you know it meets the criteria of saras. For instance, a guy's in Sheva Brachas, right? He's a chassan. And all of a sudden, wakes up one morning and says, oh, that's a funny little skin rash that I have. Oy vey. Right? So Chazal say, you know, a Kohen shouldn't be metame, a chassan, you know, during Sheva Brachos, you know, wait till the last Sheva Brachos, you go over to him and say, okay, can we step outside now, you know, and then, you know, lay it on him, you know, after the Sheva Brachos, why should he stare his simcha, right? What's that?
It's contagious.
Right, so it's interesting, so actually the, right, so, right, that, I mean, that's, obviously we're not so concerned about the contagious aspect of things. Right. Step outside and keep going. Keep walking all the way in the other direction. Right? But again, but that's a halacha that we have. In other words, we have a halacha that one is not supposed to be metame a chassan during his Sheva Brachos. And similarly, Birego. A guy is, you know, the Mr. Cholamayit Pesach, and he's running here and he's running there, you know. I don't know, it could be with all the running around, maybe he wouldn't mind being a Mitzorah, you know, for the rest of Cholamayit, right? But that halacha is, since being a Mitzorah is going to shter his simchas haregel, it's going to shter his simchas yantav, so we say, you know, okay, you have a shaila, okay, come back in a few days, you know, after Isru Chag, and, you know, the kohen will paskin on it then.
It's the same thing with shechita. The rav, it has to know when to paskin, if it's treif or not treif. If you can find a heter.
Right, but here it's even more than that. It's not just finding a heter, it's that the kohen looks at it, and says, oh, that's going to be a problem. Don't ask me that question. Come back in 5 days, and we'll deal with it then. Right, you know, so in other words, the Kohen will not even be misyachis to the saras during this time, right, because paskening tameh will make it tameh, and will shter the guy's simcha. I mean, mashalim adavadam, the closest thing I think you have to this bisman is there, is the halacha that, you know what, sometimes when a person, Rahmanul Islam, loses a relative, sometimes you don't tell the person, you know, of the p'tira, again, under certain circumstances, because once the person knows about the p'tira, they're going to have to sit shiva and follow all those halachas, and in certain cases, that's going to be a strain on the person. So an elderly person, you know, who's going to have a hard time sitting shiva and the like, so you know what, under certain circumstances, you don't tell the person right away. You wait till after the shloshim, when the person can just sit shiva for an hour, you know, and be done with it, And, you know, in a certain sense, what you don't know won't hurt you. Again, you know, when to do that is complicated. It's not a decision to be made lightly, but there is at least such a concept out there. In other words, until you know, you don't have to keep the halacha. So until the Kohen says Tameh, it's not Tameh. Between you and me, the Kohen looks at it and says, look, I know that it's Tameh. All right, but Kozman, he didn't say anything. It's not Tameh. And the Chassan can enjoy his Sheva Brachas. The fellow can enjoy his Simchas Yamtiv, right? In other words, why share all of that if unnecessary? That's the rise. Dorachel darchei noam, the ways of the Torah pleasantness. You know, even when you have tzaras, but you know, wait till an opportune time to do it. V'lochein v'ra'ahu eichu be'ichuso. So therefore, the second ra'ahu in the pasuk is again not just to examine it, but to evaluate it. What's the eichus? What's the nature of this person? Im hu roi lefi hazman letumasa. Is this person in the right time that he should be rendered tamei? Right? So first examine, but then evaluate. You know, it's a different type of re'iyah, which is taking place in the second half of the pasuk. Now, by the way, the Meshech Chachma doesn't tell you, but he seems to be weighing in on a machlokes tanoim, right? Does a machlokes tanoim, should the Kohen even bother looking at Negoim during a guy's Sheva Brachas or during Chol HaMoed, right? Otherwise, the Chassan calls over the Kohen, I have a skin rash. Oh no, I'm not. Don't show me. I don't want to know. I don't want to hear from it. You know, here's my number. Here's my card. Here's my email. You know, you'll get in touch with me in 5 days, and then you know we'll worry about it. Because one opinion in Tanoim holds, you know, once the Kohen looks, he's mechuyev to render a psak. And if the psak is going to be Tomei, he can't, you know, he has to say Tomei, right? That would not seem to work very well with the Meshech Chachma's analysis of the Pasuk, because in the Pasuk, according to the Meshech Chachma, the Kohen is first looking and examining, and then making a determination whether it's Kedai to be Metamei. I mean, the Meshech Chachma seems to be working with the other opinion in Tanoim, that no, you know, you're allowed to look, and you know, you can choose to say it's Tahar, so at least in that way, you know, he saved the chassan some agmas nefesh, and if he takes a look and says tamei, he has the right to say, "Call me back later,"
so
right?
Why would any chassan believe what the Kohen tells him in the week of Sheva Brachas? Because everyone gets the same answer.
Well,
if everyone gets the same answer that it's tahar. Mm-hmm.
No. The Kohen can't say tahar if it's really tamei.
But what I'm saying, if he can't say tamei
right
through the week of Sheva Brachas,
right?
So then, what's the point of going? I mean,
no, he can't say tahor if it's tameh. In other words, he would get one of two answers: either it's tahor,
okay,
or come back. Now, come back means come back means it's tameh. In other words, everyone's going to understand that. But what it means is halachically, he doesn't have to treat himself as a mitzvah until he comes back after Yom Tov.
So why does he even have to come during the week of Sheva Brachas if the lemaisa it's the same?
Well,
answer.
Well, no, but for the week of Sheva Brachas, but at least the Chassan will have the Yishuv Hadas if the answer is Tahar. So then at least he has the, you know, if it's come back at the end of Sheva Brachas, so basically he'll be sitting for the rest of Sheva Brachas thinking, okay, I guess I'm not going back to work, you know, right after Sheva Brachas, you know, we have another couple of things to take care of. At least if it's Tahar, so there's the Yishuv Hadas, you know, the Chassan doesn't have to worry, I got it off my head, and I know that it's not considered to be a problem. Right, so you know that I guess you know from the Chassan's point of view, you know sometimes ain't simcha kataras hasveikus. You know, there's no simcha like answering up questions. He'd rather have it answered, you know, than to have it dangling over his head that he doesn't know, you know, what's going to be. But again, Meshech Chachma's reading of the pasuk seems to be, you know, working with that interpretation that it is the Kohen's right to look at it and then decide to just tell the guy, I'll come back later. And we'll talk about it then. Yeah.
This sounds like the Meshech Chachma was interpreting the halacha from the pasuk, like he's darshaning the pasuk.
He is, right?
You have to be like to darshan a pasuk like halachically?
No. So again, what is Meshech Chachma doing? Meshech Chachma is not making up the halacha. The halacha is a halacha. Right,
Meshech Chachma. Where we get it from?
Right now, he's saying that we can see it in this pasuk. Now the truth is, so where does the Gemara darshan it from? So the Meshech Chochma goes on to say, Zer she'omar uv'yom he'ra'os, yeshyom she'iyato roe. Right, the Pasuk says later on, uv'yom he'ra'os bo basar chai yitma, on the day on which raw skin is seen on the mitzora, he should be tame. So the Gemara Darshan, Gemara Ma'ikata, that instead, it could have just said, uveheira osbo basar chayitma, when you see raw skin on the mitzora, it's a sign of tuma. Instead it says, uveyom, on the day on which you see it. So says the Gemara, yesh yomim sha'ato roe, yesh yomim sha'iyato roe. There's some days where the Kohen should look at the tzaras and, you know, do his job, and there's some days where the Kohen should say, sorry, I can't look at it now, right? And those days, says the Gemara, are like a chassan during Sheva Brachas, you know, a person during the regal and whatnot. So the Gemara, you know, has this halacha. You know, again, Meshech Chochma didn't make up the halacha. The Gemara has this halacha, but the Gemara darshans it from a different pasuk. So now the obvious question is, if you can darshan it from here, so how come the Gemara darshans it from over there, right? And I was, you know, why did the Gemara do what the Meshech Chochma did? So the Meshech Chochma says, nah. Hu inyan mitzad hazman. Lo she'im lefit chunasot tzarech ischabru simanoshim chayotzei bo. All that pasuk tells you is that there are some zmanim which are mesugo for the kohen checking negoim, and some zmanim which are not so mesugo for checking negoim. Now, if you just had that pasuk of yom heiros bo, you wouldn't necessarily know that the good zman versus the bad zman has something to do with the stage in life that the person is in. Meaning, you might have said, well, a good zman, a bad zman for checking negoyim is the regel. A bad zman for checking negoyim is the regel, is yontav or chalamoe. A good zman is any other time, right? You might have said that. In other words, the distinction between yontav chalamoe and non-yontav chalamoe is one which is purely calendar-based. But in the case of the chasen and sheva brachas, it's not so much a calendar issue, it's a personal issue. Meaning, you know, it's unique to this person. So that you wouldn't have necessarily gotten from Uveyom Heiraos. What? How does the Gemara know to extend the distinction between regel, non-regel, to chasan, to chasan versus non-chasan? You know, the two cases not exactly parallel. So says the Meshech Chochma, even though the Gemara doesn't say it, what's implicit in the Gemara is once the Gemara quoted Uveyom Heiraos Bo, the Gemara was also thinking about my pasuk, says the Meshech Chochma, v'ra'ahu, the double re'iyah, which extends the idea of regel versus non-regel to, you know, chasen versus non-chasen, that sometimes you have to evaluate the person's unique life experiences and where he's holding in life, as opposed to just a blanket rule, like, you know, on Yontiv, you know, you're not allowed to check negoyim, whereas, you know, not on Yontif, you are allowed to check Negoim. So, what the Meshech Chochma was doing, and again, it's such a unique idea that he has, basically he's saying, although the Gemara didn't quote my Pasuk, the Gemara really needs my Pasuk in order to get to the Drasha, which the Gemara learned out from another Pasuk. Right? Now, again, that's still a pretty bold thing to say, you know? I'm telling you the Pasuk that the Gemara didn't quote, you know, which the Gemara really had in mind, even though the Gemara never said it. Right? Okay, but the truth is, it's a very fascinating way of reading the Pasuk. You know, the two re'iyos, you know, do very much zero in on that particular idea. Take a short, cute vort from the Meshech Chochma. Right? So, Yud Gimel Lamed Gimel. Right? Later on in that same perek, when a man or a woman has a negat saras on the head, you know, in the hair area, or for the case of a man, in the beard, right? So it describes what the halacha is, right? Saras of the scalp or of the beard. So it says in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, v'hiskaloch, the mitzora should shave, v'yes hanesek lo yigaleach, but the area where the affliction is found, he should not shave. Now, if you look in the Chumash, in the word v'hiskaloch, the gimel is written as a big gimel. Why? Because. All right. So So it says the Meshech Chachma, let me tell you why. V'hiskaloch, Reish Yud Zayin, the top left-hand corner of the page. V'hiskaloch Gimel Rabosi, it's a big Gimel. L'rames, Sheshlosh Shalavin Yidochim B'tiglachta. It's possible for three lavim, three negative commandments, to be pushed aside by the giluach, by the shaving of the mitzvah. Number one, se'ar zekano. Right, the halacha is that a Jewish man is not allowed to use a razor to shave his beard. Nonetheless, the mitzvah shaves his beard even with a razor. So in other words, this is an example of asei docha lo saseh. In other words, the mitzvah of a hiskaloch pushes aside the isra of using a razor to shave his beard. V'afimu kohen, d'ksiv bo lavi yaseiro. The Torah writes an extra lav by a kohen. If you're a kohen, you get extra hashgacha pratis on the one hand. But on the other hand, if you shave your beard with a razor, so you get two lavin, right? That's, you take the good, you take the bad, you're being a kohen, you get the whole package, right? So the kohen who shaves his beard with a razor gets two lavin. So if this mitzvah is a kohen and he's forced to shave his beard as per the Torah's directive, he would get two lavin. V'nazir, let's say, this guy is really having an interesting identity crisis, right? Let's say you're a nazir, a person's a nazir, and in the middle of being a nazir, he gets tzaras. It could happen. Could happen. Why not? So we know the nazir is not allowed to shave his hair, but as a mitzvah, his davka is supposed to shave his hair. So the mitzvah of v'hiskaloch pushes aside the lo saseh for the nazir of shaving any part of his body, and certainly his beard. Hare gimel, or in the case of his hair, right? In the case where he has a nesek in the hair, hare gimel lavin kulam docha osan tiglachta dumitzara, right? So here there are basically the Torah is being meramez to the fact that there are three potential lo saaseis that could be pushed aside by this giluach. So it says v'his ga loch with a big gimel, and the best thing is the last word the Meshech Chachma says. Upashut.
Nah.
Come on. This is obvious as to what the big gimel means in this pasuk. Okay. It was obvious to him. I don't know that it's obvious to us, but at least now he shared his wisdom with us, so that when we see this big gimel in the pasuk, the big gimel is telling you the concept of asei docha lo saseh as it applies in three different potential scenarios. When the mitzvah is being megaleach, when he's shaving himself. Okay, one last nekuda in the laws of tzaras. V'ish ki imoreit rosho ish tzaruahu tame. Right, a little bit later on in this perek, in Mem Aleph, it says v'ish ki imoreit rosho kereachu taharhu. When a person has hair fall out, that's just a sign of baldness, right? However, v'chiyeva korachas ova gabachas, when a person has in the back of his head or in the front of his head nega lavon adam dom, a whitish reddish affliction, tzaras porachasi, that is a form of tzaras bekorachta obegabachta, on the back or the front of his head, right? So he should be declared to be a mitzvah. And later on, in Pasuk Mem Dalet, the Pasuk says, Ish tsoruahu tomehu. A man who is a mitzvah, is he? He is tomeh. Right? So, comes the Meshech Chachma as follows. Ho'inyan, demida b'mida lo batel. To understand this whole parasha, the notion of a person getting tsaras on the head, you have to understand that that's not by accident. The fact that he got it on his head is midah k'neged midah. V'alkimutz v'tzaras ayin bo nigei batim chayotzei bozeh. For instance, Chazal tell us that nigei batim, what we're going to read about later on, the notion that tzaras afflicts a house is because the person is stingy and doesn't spend his money on good causes like tzedakah. So his possessions, like his house, which he holds in such big esteem, it's one of these guys, you walk in and chas v'shalom, you should get a little bit of mud. Yeah, chandeliers, no mud on the carpet. Don't swivel too quickly. You'll destroy the rug. If he's right, if he's so makbid on this and he doesn't give money to tzedakah accordingly, so the Rabbanu Shlomo says, oh yeah, I'll send tzaras on your house. you'll see, you know, what interior decorating is all about, right? So we see there's a concept of mido keneged mido, not only in the notion of saras, but even the place where the saras strikes. Vim hanega barosh, if the guy gets saras on the head, bevadai hu meshubish b'koach haseichov v'deo zaros, it must point to the fact that there's something wrong with his head, davka, right? In other words, that he's not, he doesn't think right. You know, there's something wrong with his thoughts.
Should it affect his mouth more?
What's that?
Saras should affect his mouth? Because that's what he's saying, Lashon Hara?
Well, it's actually interesting. The Chazal talk about seven different sins for which the person can get saras. I mean, for us, the most famous example is Lashon Hara is linked to saras, but as he's going to say over here, there are other sins which have a connection to saras, and in particular, one sin, he's going to say, is particularly connected to saras of the head. How so? V'lochein ba'at saras b'karachto makom ha-machshava u'mishkan ha-secha. Therefore, saras will come on the head, right? The place of machshava where the seichel resides. V'nei ma'chet shalo hu b'midos v'kochas ha-nevesh ha-pa'ulos. If his chet relates to midos, or, you know, spiritual qualities, or even activities, k'mo sh'amo zayin dvarim negoyim boim. Right, the Gemara in Erechim says that there's seven different things which can bring about saras. Right, so then you know it's not tied to the head necessarily. Lo kein im chet bekoach sichlo she'oz hanega birosho. If the sin is, relates to something intellectual, so then the nega will strike his head as well. And then he goes on to say, umize mashibo gasus haruach. Right, one of the things that saras can come about for is gasus ruach, is haughtiness. She'oz hanega she'oz hatov hito b'seichel umevi lavod zara. Well, she'amav ram levavecha v'shachachta v'chulei. Ultimately, haughtiness is an intellectual sin because the person thinks I'm a somebody, right, and it brings the person to avod zara, right. So it's ultimately it's the sin of the intellect. Lochein beuziah v'sarach zarcha v'mitzchol makom amachshava. Therefore, when Uziah, who was the king, tried to serve as Kohen Gadol and came, you know, into the Beis Hamikdash to serve as the Kohen, it says that he was afflicted but saras b'mitzcha, right? That saras broke out against his forehead. That was a sin of gasus haruach, of haughtiness. He thought that he would ascend to the kahuna in addition to being a melech. So the saras comes and afflicts him in the makom ha-machshava, right? The place of thought, you know, to show that intellectually he was skewed. Therefore, who chote b'koach sichlo amiyuchad ba'adam mitzad shu ish she'eno b'shum chay bilti medaber l'chein oma ish tzoruahu tamehu. So therefore, since this particular type of tzoras comes because of haughtiness, because he thinks he's a gavra, he's a somebody, therefore when it stresses in the pasuk that he's a mitzora, it says ish tzoruahu tamehu. He's a man who's a mitzora. He thinks he's a somebody, right? It's his thinking of himself in great haughty terms, right? Or using his intellect, which, you know, in a improper way, which ultimately is the sign of a human being as opposed to an animal, someone who, you know, has an intellect and can use the intellect. Ultimately, it's that, you know, misuse of the intellect which is going to bring him down. Therefore, ish tzoruahu, his manhood, his humanity is stressed under those circumstances, to underscore that point. Just one little, I just want to close with, you know, Shabbos HaChodesh. Here's one insight on the Haftarah for Shabbos HaChodesh, which comes from Sefer Yecheskel. It's back at the end of Shmos, on page Kuf Samich Beis, the bottom right-hand column. Talking about the Karbanos that are going to be brought in the third Beis HaMikdash, by the Nasi, by the leader of the Jewish people. The pasuk describes how the Nasi will make a karbon ola as a voluntary karbon, or a karbon shlomim as a voluntary karbon. But the way it talks about an olas nedava and a shalme nedava is very striking. It says nedava ola, nedava comes first, or shlomim nedava. Shlomim comes before nedava when it comes to shlomim. Why the reversal? I mean, within a few words of one another, either olas nedava shalme nedava, or nedava ola nedava shlomim. Why switch it around? So he says, hiktim nedava la ola, shamisnadiv ola Dilma also de takol de diyimo. Sarach lahavi olazar v'likros shem ola aleha kehilil psachim reish elu dvarim. When it comes to an olas nedava, you want to make sure that you don't misuse the carbon ola before your makrivit. So basically, you would be kare shem. You would declare it to be an ola at the last possible minute. You would bring the animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and basically right before you're about to hand it over to the Kohen, you would say, this is an Ola. So in the case of an Ola, Nedava comes before Ola, meaning your desire to be Makrivit precedes the Kriyas Shem Ola, right? Aval b'shlomim she'en bohem me'ilo mechayim, yachol yo shem shlomim kodem, v'achaz nedava l'Hashem. But when it comes to a shlomim, so the halacha is, even if you were kari shem shlomim, while the animal was still alive, there won't be me'ila on it. There's only me'ila on it after it's shechted. So there's no harm done if you say, this animal is going to be a shlomim. So you might as well call it a shlomim way back at home. And then shlomim nedava, the kriyas shem shlomim, perceives it being a nedava. It's a simple insight. It doesn't really relate to the rest of the haftarah. But again, it's a classic, beautiful example how the Meshech Chachma picked up on even the smallest little minutia of the pasuk and saw tremendous halachas lurking therein.
That's a new meila by shlom.
So mechayim, you know, while the shlom is still alive. We'll Bez Hashem will pick up next week around the same time, 8:30 or so, maybe a drop later, just because Ma'ariv will get a little bit later. But again, the shir will be here, and we'll see you Bez Hashem then.